Hey guys, it's Joey and Ray, and I am super excited to be bringing you season 3 of A Human Connection. And just like all the other seasons, we're going to be bringing to you some of the most influential people in this industry, some people that I have followed and have mentored me along my 30 plus year career in this business. So hope you join along with us so we laugh and we learn along the way. Well, hey guys, welcome to another edition of A Human Connection. And I am super excited today for our guest. This is somebody that I have known and admired for many, many years. I'm anxious to go back into some of our history here today and talk about the good old days. Although I started probably many years before you did, Craig, but would love to introduce my guest today. This is Craig Ritter, Ritter Insurance. Welcome, Craig.
Thank you, Joanne. Yeah, appreciate the opportunity to come on and talk a little bit about my story.
Yeah, well, I love your story. I have heard bits and pieces of your history, obviously, over the years. We've shared some history over the years, for sure. But these episodes, again, for those of you that have listened to any of the other Human Connection episodes that we've done, we'll talk business today because that's where we met and that's the connection that we initially have. But I want to know about Craig as a dad. I want to know about Craig as a son in this business, how you take care of your people. You have phenomenal people. Your company continues to grow. I want to know, you know, what's your thoughts on that, the future of our industry, things like that. But to get us started, for those of you that don't know Craig, why don't you give us just a little bit of your bio and background and how you got to where you are today, Craig?
Yeah, sure. I started in college at Penn State, so I don't know if you can see behind me. I've got Penn State.
Nice.
The Penn
nice.
State pillow. Yep. Before that, like my family moved around quite a bit, so I had the kind of the unique distinction of going to four different high schools in four years.
Oh,
so,
wow.
You know, really bounced around schools a lot. I think for me, that was a difficult, you know, difficult to make friends, to go to a new school. It got a little bit, you know, frustrating for me. From a personality perspective, I was, you know, I'm extroverted, so I get a lot of energy from meeting people, but even that was a little bit much.
Yeah. You're always the new guy, right?
Yeah. To try to like, you know, break into friend groups and stuff like that was very difficult growing up, going through high school, which are, you know, really formative years. I was a good student in high school. I was really good, you know, in particular, a really good math student. So when I graduated, I went to Penn State and I started out as a math major. So
oh, no.
It was a little bit, my parents were both teachers. My dad was a phys ed major and my mom was an elementary school teacher. So there was, they hadn't done like the science-y stuff. So I was a little bit different in that regard. My older sister went to Westchester University. And she was a teacher, so I was like the first one, I guess.
I'm the same way. I'm the first to break out of the teacher mold on my mom's side of the family for many generations.
So I didn't know anything about, you know, business or, but I got a couple years into math, and then I think my junior year, I kind of was scratching my head saying, I wonder what, you know, what am I going to do with all this math? Like I could be a math professor or I could be a math teacher, but I went from math into finance. So I went into the business school, which like, I didn't even know like what business school was or meant, you know, it's kind of funny.
Yeah.
Looking back now, like that there's like so much opportunity in the business world. So anyway, that was the direction I went. And my dad ran an insurance agency. So, he was selling mostly, life insurance policies to students because given his connection, and to, you know, the parents of students, he would do mailers and things like that. So like, Joanne, even at like age of like 6 or 7, I was in the insurance. I might have been because
you should have known it was inevitable.
Yeah, I was folding letters and licking envelopes and putting stamps on envelopes and all that stuff. Then eventually my dad got a letter folding machine, which was like a huge improvement versus
and your job was eliminated. That's another example of technology eliminating a position.
I think we just did more mailers. I don't think we did. It didn't eliminate my job. We'd watch football games and stuff envelopes on Sundays. So, yeah, that was kind of how we spent our Sundays. But from there, I moved to Salt Lake City and took a job with USF&G Insurance. Mm-hmm. So I worked in the property and casualty side of the business.
Okay.
That was in 1992. I moved out there. I really liked skiing. So I had gone out there on spring break and really loved really kind of fell in love with Salt Lake, and an opportunity came up for me to work in the fidelity and surety bonding department, which is kind of like financial analysis side. So it's a credit guarantee business. So I got to use some of my finance background and accounting background to evaluate different projects and guarantee projects, things like that. So what I found though was, in working at USF&G, I really enjoyed the people part of the business more than the financial analysis part of the business. So that was a big life-changing discovery that I had, because I started out in mathematics, which is very analytical. Moved into finance, again, very analytical, took an analytical job for an insurance company, and then found like, hey, the part I liked the most was like going out, meeting agents, meeting the construction contractors that were building the roads and bridges and building schools and churches and things like that, that we were guaranteeing the performance on those contracts. So that was quite a revelation to me, given my background. I'd say probably the greatest thing about my time at USF&G is that's where I met my wife.
So, nice. Perfect.
Was working, Heidi went to Penn State and graduated the same year as me.
I just figured that's where you met, but you didn't know each other.
No, we never met. I mean, we probably crossed paths at Penn State, but given 40,000 undergrads, we didn't. And she was in the liberal arts college. She was a French major. So, and I was in the business school. So we didn't really cross paths too much from taking classes together and things like that. We think we might've had one econ class together, but other than that, we don't really remember meeting each other there.
Yeah.
But we did meet. She was in the fidelity and surety department in Hartford, Connecticut. And I was in the same department in Salt Lake City, and USF&G was headquartered in Baltimore. They would bring all of their management trainees back to Baltimore to do like a week long training. And that's kind of where we met. And we were in the same department. We went both to Penn State. So that was kind of the beginning of our relationship. And, probably like a year later, she moved out to Salt Lake. That was in 94. She moved out to Salt Lake, and then we got married in 95. So pretty quick courtship, but it's kind of like when you know.
Exactly. When you know, you know. That's right.
So one of the interesting facts about my family, me and my dad, when I was at Penn State, my dad had a heart transplant. He was one of the first people to have a heart transplant at Hershey Medical, which is close by here. So one of my memories from Penn State was my sophomore year being in the fraternity, and one of my fraternity brothers waking me up and saying, "Hey, Craig, get up. Your dad's having his heart transplant." And Hershey's about an hour and a half from Penn State to Hershey. So I got in my car and drove to the hospital to see my dad before he actually went in for his heart transplant. So I did make it naked there just before he went in.
So is it, one of those situations where he literally didn't know until he gets a phone call that you're getting a heart that day?
Yeah, exactly. Until they can, he was on the list.
So it is just like that. Wow.
Yeah, he was on the list waiting, and he had a ventricle assist pump that he was on to assist his heart in keeping him alive until there was a donor, you know, that or a heart that became available. You're just waiting. Wow. So then you get the call and it's like,
let's go.
Literally hours and you're in surgery. You know, it's not that the whole thing happens so quickly. So you go from like wondering and waiting to like, oh my gosh, it's happening right now.
And that was how many years ago?
That was in 1990. So wow. It was 33 years ago. Awesome. Yeah. So he's going to have his 33rd anniversary here. I think it's next month.
That's incredible. What a great
story. So he actually, after his heart transplant, he retired and he played golf for a while. And then after that, he joined up with some guys that had a life and annuity brokerage called URL. Mm-hmm. And he got bored playing golf, I guess, after about a year. You know, my dad, it's hard to believe because he still plays.
Plays quite a bit.
He still plays probably pretty much every day. He'll play golf every day if it's not too cold and not too windy.
Yep.
But he started with them a Medicare FMO. So they focused on Medicare supplement, final expense, and long-term care. So it's kind of interesting how all these things come together. He was just starting that business. And I was, you know, kind of figuring out what I wanted to do, being in, you know, my early 20s. And I really enjoyed the working with agents, and that was kind of what my dad's business was, you know, being able to work with agents and train agents and, you know, share great products for their customers, you know, help them get contracted and so forth. So we were talking on the phone and I said, hey, I think I want to work with you. And I never thought I'd want to work with my dad. My dad never thought that I would want to work with him in business, but it's amazing how things turn out. So,
come to you and approach you about that. You were the one that first initiated that conversation.
Yeah. He was telling me about his business, and what he does. So I was like, well, yeah, tell me what kind of things you do and things like that. And, I wasn't sure what I wanted to do. I was thinking about going to business school, you know, getting my MBA or working on Wall Street or becoming a consultant or, you know, becoming an investment banker. I wasn't exactly sure, you know, what I wanted to do, but it was interesting. But I also, you know, I loved entrepreneurship too. And I kind of figured that, you know, I had that kind of burning desire to do something, to build a business and not necessarily be working for somebody else, you know. Working for, you know, a very large insurance company, you kind of get the politics and all that, you know, working for a large organization. I wasn't like completely suited to that. So it was something that was interesting to me on many different levels.
Yeah.
So Heidi and I moved from Salt Lake back to Harrisburg. That was my return to Pennsylvania. It was in 1997 we moved back. So that was kind of, and I started working with my dad. It was just me and him at the time in the URL. We call it URL's basement. It was basically like a split level residential house that we worked in. There was like an upstairs. So you walked in the front door and you could either go down the stairs or up the stairs. Yeah. And we were like down the stairs. So we would joke that we were the, you know, the redheaded stepchild that lived in the basement that did this weird Medicare.
Don't all good businesses start either in the basement or in somebody's garage, right?
The garage or the basement.
All the big stories.
Yeah, but no, they were great. They were great partners to us. You know, really meant a lot to me that they felt enough about my dad to bring him into the business and trusted him to start the senior division within within URL. So that was a great thing. So yes, that was kind of how I got started. A lot of people I talk to, like, get in the insurance business, they didn't start in insurance. It's kind of funny how, like, most people have a story that they were doing, you know, something else, and then they wound up in the insurance business. Whereas I got, my dad was in it. Yeah. I started when I was like a little child, you know, doing matters and whatever.
So did the two of you together start Ritter Insurance, or was that you breaking away? I can't remember.
Oh yeah. So, so I started with him in 97. It was just the two of us. And then, in 2004, I wasn't an owner. I was just basically at that point, I was running the company at that point. And we had about 7 or 8 employees at that time. And that's when Medicare Part D was starting. Yeah. And I just told my dad that I thought the business, it was time for us to kind of leave the nest. And we approached my dad's partner with the idea that we would buy them out. So we bought them out in 2005. And that was when we formed Ritter Insurance Marketing. So okay. It was kind of the successor company to URL Senior Care. It was basically a name change, but so we bought their interest. And I mean, I think that's one of the attributes that makes a good business person sometimes is the ability to take risk. Because yeah. that was a major risk for me and my dad both. So
that's a big jump.
My dad had to not mortgage the house, but he had to like put his house up as collateral, and I put my house up as collateral. Of course, I didn't have as much equity in my house as my dad.
Yeah.
So it wasn't as big of a deal for me.
But you were willing, you were showing you were true partners. Yeah. You were willing to do that as well.
But yeah, to get the loan to buy them out, we had to, and my dad had, you know, his retirement, his investments and all of that was used as collateral for the loan. So like basically everything he owned was collateralized by the bank in order to buy the agency. So a lot, you know, showed a lot of faith in each other, that we would be able to do it together. Also a lot of belief in the industry too.
Yep.
You know, one of the things when I was, you know, younger, I thought, and I mentioned too, I think that, you know, I've got that entrepreneur streak in me. I thought, I just want to own a business. You know, I don't care if it's a yogurt stand or a car wash or vending machines or Medicare insurance. I didn't really care what business it was. I just wanted to be an entrepreneur and have a business. But having matured a bit and looking back on it, I think being in the right industry, being in the right business really makes a big difference. So,
boy, isn't that the truth?
Yeah, that was one of the things that I recognized of the Medicare business was the value of the business that we do has, and the renewal, you know, the renewals and the relationships with agents and the relationships with that agents have with their customers and how deep those run. There's so much more value to that than what maybe you see on an income statement or a balance sheet or you know, if you look at it financially. That was one of the things that I recognized was I thought there's a lot more value here than what the bank thinks there is, and what, because the bank wouldn't really lend us anything if we didn't have, you know,
banks didn't quite understand us several years ago, did they?
Yeah. Yeah. That bank, certainly back in the mid 2000s, they had no idea of how, you know, how valuable those relationships are and those. So that was one of the things I kind of recognized. So I had a lot of confidence although it was, you know, it was a bit concerning. And my dad was, you know, we were at different places. So I had, at that point, I had two preschool kids. So, you know, it was my oldest son, Quinn, was born in 2001, and my daughter, Callie, was born in 2002. So, you know, having two kids that weren't even in kindergarten at that point, kind of gives you an idea of like how much confidence you have in the business, and how much confidence you have in your partner.
Yeah. My dad, 2005 was a pretty good year to take that leap with everything happening in the Medicare space.
Yeah, it turned out that the timing was pretty good. It was good.
Yeah.
Was good
timing is everything, that. Right?
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah. So we, you know, we grew the business. You know, the fact that I was a little bit younger and my dad was a little bit older, we had like some disagreements about, you know, how to run the business. We would go to dinner. Me, my dad, Carol, and Heidi would all be at dinner, and me and my dad would be talking business the whole time.
Yeah.
And then eventually they sat us down and said, "Hey, when we go to dinner, you guys can't talk about business. You talk about business like, you know, 10 hours a day." So that was one of the rules that they put in place for us, which was, I thought, a very good rule.
I think that's a very good rule. It's hard. It's got to be so hard when it is truly a family business. And you're with that person at day, you're with that person. And I think about like husbands and wives that run companies together and drive to work together, drive home together, have dinner together, get up and go to work together the next day, raise their kids together. That's, I don't know where that separation point comes, but I've always thought about that, how hard that would be.
Yeah, it can definitely be all encompassing. And that's like the only thing that you're talking about. So, that was a great suggestion that they had, but he and I would disagree about, he was more interested, I think, in, you know, paying off the debt, and I was more interested in growing the business. So that was kind of the philosophy, the difference in philosophy. So I actually ended up buying my dad out 2 years after. So in 2007, I acquired my dad's interest in Ritter Insurance Marketing. You know, basically took the philosophy from a business perspective of, you know, reinvesting, you know, continuing to reinvest in the business. A lot of my business philosophy is similar to my personal philosophy. So I grew up in the church, you know, with a Christian upbringing. It's still important to me today, you know, to me and Heidi both. Has a lot of influence on kind of how we do our charity work and our, you know, how we spend our money. But it also had a lot to do with how we ran our business too. Mm-hmm. So, you know, one of the philosophies that I had was comes from the Bible of, tithing, giving 10% of your income to your church. So Heidi and I do that. But from a business perspective, I thought that I should give 10% of my income to my employees. So not exactly the same, thing, but
that's a great philosophy.
Comes from this kind of the same root of, you know, giving back. So having like a servant leadership attitude of how you run your business. I think for me, like my religious upbringing and kind of my faith had a lot to do with how I ran my company. So that was kind of one of the tenets, was always giving 10% to the employees every year. We actually many years did more than that. So so that was important. And also just how you think about who you're serving. So when I actually brought in Scott Kowalski and Dave Dietz, so my brother-in-law and my fraternity brother, two of my brothers, into became partners with me. Yeah. And we had the philosophy that, you know, we serve three groups. So we served our employees, we served our agents, and we served the insurance companies. And every time we had a major decision to make, we would always go back to think about how is this going to help our employees? How is this going to help our insurance agents? And how is this going to help the insurance companies that we serve? Because we had a firm belief that if we could help those three groups, that we would be taken care of, that it wouldn't, you know, as long as we were providing that service. So that thread goes through a lot of how I run the business and how I grew the business. You know, another example early on was, with my finance background, when we were quoting Medicare supplement, I created a Medicare quote engine.
Yes, you did. The rest probably, of us were all so jealous. You were so CSG before CSG was CSG.
Yeah. I think it was probably like in the 90s, even, or maybe even early 2000s. It was well before 2005. So I wrote the code.
It was all, there was no Medicare Advantage to speak of when you created that.
It was well before Medicare Advantage. So it was either the late 90s or early 2000s.
Wow.
When I created Medicare Quote Engine and basically saw my dad's rate sheets and how we calculated Medicare supplement premiums. And I wrote the code initially in an Excel file and then in Visual Basic to put it on a website so that all of our agents could just input, you know, age and gender, just like CSG is today. Wow. That was kind of the early precursor, but you know, really thinking like how do you help your agents do more? You know, that was, or how do you help your agents make their job easier? You know, things like that. How do we save time within our organization so that we can do more things for our agents, not just like calculating quotes? So that was really the philosophy that was kind of underpinned why I did that. And you know, if you can do things like that in business, if you can serve other people or make other people's job easier, then you don't really have to worry about. It takes care of a lot of other issues.
Well, so your stories definitely are the threads of our companies run very, very similar. We created something years ago that we use here, similar philosophy called ACE. It was just a terminal. I'm big with packaging things and giving things a name, because I figure once it has a name, then it's kind of a living thing that we can all talk about. But we came up with ACE, which is amazing customer experience. And the customer we talk about, we have three, which is your teammates, take care of them, make sure they have a good experience with you each day. The agents, obviously, is our customer. They have to have a good experience when they work with us. And then our carriers, which I would bet if you pulled, you know, 20 different other FMOs, not that it's good or bad, but a lot of people forget that is, they're one of our customers as well. We want to do good for our carriers. We want to be their favorite partner office to work with. We want to be doing some of the heavy lifting that our team can do so that maybe they don't have to. And then that makes us shine in their eyes. So maybe we get the next, you know, first peek at something. But it's not necessarily, that's not the why. The why goes back to we're in business to take care of people, to impact people's lives, to make their lives better. And that's their employees, our agents, the ultimate customer. But we, like you, don't touch that except on our career side. We don't get to touch the actual customer in our day to day. But we always have that vision of grandparents, that's who we're taking care of. And the carrier is a big, big part of that. So I thought that was so interesting.
Yeah. When you said that. I love that.
We spread that gospel every day. We have ACE all over. We talk about it in all of our staff meetings. We use ACE moments, like, wow, that was a ACE moment with the way you'd handled that with that agent or that customer. So that was just so cool when you said that.
Yeah. Wow, that's cool.
Yeah,
I agree.
So let's do talk about a little bit about your people. You mentioned that your maybe financial background, you're more of always looking to grow, always looking to invest to make things bigger and better. You have definitely shot out of the cannon when it comes to other FMOs that started your size and how fast you did grow. Walk me through that process, very technology oriented. I know that's the lane that you speak, and that's a service you can provide your agents that I don't know that any other FMO can do what you do in that lane. But walk me through kind of your decision process of you started with you and your dad and then seven or eight, then added some brothers. Walk me through what that looks like when you sit down to expand and where and why you decide to expand your people.
Yeah, there was a lot can go into that and probably go a lot of directions, Joanne. I think, you know, one of the first things I recognized was kind of the importance of technology. So my fraternity brother was working in the software development area. Okay. Running a team of developers in Philadelphia. And I thought that this would be, you know, an important part of a Medicare FMO would be to have a software development team or a technology team. So he was one of my early big hires.
Yeah, which that was a good one.
My dad and I joke about that now. That's like, my dad was like, how's writing software going to help us sell insurance? You know, he wasn't.
I can see Cal saying that too.
We weren't on the same page with that. We joke about that now, but you know, how important that was. So, being able to grow that technology team. I mean, today we have 28 software developers and DBAs and folks that work on the IT side. So that whole team is probably way bigger than the company was when we started.
Yeah,
there's probably
around
35 technologists, you know, in that group that do front end, back end, data and IT services like hardware, things like that. So it's a big group. I think having the confidence to invest when, you know, maybe it's like early stage is, you know, one of the other things that I think helped me to grow. So sometimes you have to have a little bit of faith in the opportunity to be able to hire somebody to do a particular thing. Where it's maybe not like obvious right away. So I think that's one of the mistakes that you can make as a business owner is to like wait until it's too late, you know, almost too late to hire for a position. Sometimes you have to hire with a little bit of slack or flexibility. Being able to hire another early hire was an HR manager. I thought that was a big, because a lot of times, you don't devote as much professionalism to bringing in the right people, the quality people. It's kind of like you're going all these different ways and somebody looks good and you're just like, okay, you're hired.
Yeah.
And you came on, you know, having the confidence that you're going through a process was good, you know, to find good people. So our HR department, I think, was a real asset to be able to bring us on. And then the way we kind of developed our business was we worked with regional plans that had strong Medicare Advantage products, but didn't have external broker distribution. So we used our technology to be able to create the same experience for the agents that they were used to with some of the larger national plans that had, you know, already built out the infrastructure to support broker distribution. So that was kind of where we married like the technology that we built to be able to, you know, process business and pay commissions correctly and to be able to manage hierarchies and pay overrides and all that good stuff, you know, all those things that are necessary, to a health plan that was looking to expand their products to and using brokers to expand, but that didn't have the technology to be able to support that. So that was, I think, one of the keys that helped us grow our employees was being able to attract the insurance companies to give us contracts to be able to grow their business, and then to be able to find the right people to support all that. So that was definitely, and obviously being able to find agents to in those different markets. So again, kind of comes back to the same theme that we talk about a lot, which is like the employees and the carriers and the agents all being and bringing all that, you know, bringing in that whole team together is really kind of what we do as leaders to be able to facilitate all these relationships, which creates like so much value in our business.
I love that. You're talking kind of like about
a magic, right? That's our job.
Yeah, it is. It's like cooking, you know, you got to get the recipe just right sometimes. And sometimes you got to put a little more this direction. Sometimes you got to ease up on this direction. But when you were talking about the quote engine that you initially built before even CSG existed, it reminded me of a funny story. So the staff that we have now, there's very few of us that remember those days of having to go to the supply room, pull a rate sheet out, get your calculator, get a ruler. So we've always joked that the staff now, we should have that be just a fun exercise. Like, can you go find a rate sheet and figure them and separate and give them all these little different criteria? I think they'd lose their mind.
That's right. Yeah. Zip code factor and
zip code factors, household discount, all that. Yeah. A lot of calculators.
Went in there. Smoker, non-smoker rates.
Oh gosh, I know, right? Tell me a little bit about kind of now looking forward. We're now official partners as being a part of Integrity, which is an amazing thing. But tell me kind of what your vision, what do you think is the next biggest change that you're seeing in our industry, Craig? Is it agents changing? Is it the products changing? Is it how consumers buy? Is it maybe a mixture of all that? Is it the product we're going to be selling or how we're going to be selling it? What's your crystal ball over the next 5-10 years that you think is some of the biggest changes coming?
Yeah, I think about, you know, I do think a lot about what's going to change, Joanne, in our industry, and we can talk about that. I have some thoughts about that, you know, what some of the challenges are going to be going forward. But I also like to think about what things are not going to change, right? So that's kind of maybe my starting point.
There you go. I like that.
So when I talk to my, you know, when I talk to our agents, you know, I like to say, well, these are the things that are not going to change.
Yeah.
Because you get the crystal ball, right? And I can tell you what my ideas are, and you might agree or you might disagree. And you know, who knows, you know, who the next administration is going to be, and you know, where we're going to be in 5 years or 10 years. But you know, to focus on some core things like, you know, the importance of the agent's relationship with their client, you know, that's, I think, is going to continue to have a tremendous amount of value. I think as FMOs, our commitment to our agents to be able to support their success, that needs to never change. That needs to be something that, you know, we're always focused on, always is like our North Star, you know, finding ways to help our agents help their customers.
Yep.
I think complexity is probably, I think things are going to get more complicated, right? I don't really see things getting simpler. I see things getting more and more complicated. I know just like between the number of plans and the number of carriers and the number of products that they offer, like, I think it's just going to get more and more complicated. But I like to focus on, for starters, at least to kind of center yourself to say, like, what are the things that won't change? And, you know, these are things that we can control, that we can, you know, make sure that we deliver on. And then talking about kind of how I see things going forward, I mentioned, you know, complexity. I think that's that almost goes without saying. You know, sometimes you get the pendulum swings one way and then it like swings back. So with like Medicare supplement, you know, there was a standard, you know, things got really complicated and then we had standardization. So I don't necessarily see standardization in Medicare Advantage happening, but I see it continuing to get more complicated.
Yep.
I think with some of the, you know, you think about the funding with the government, you know, you think about our how big our debt is, that, you know, the government eventually is going to have to figure out, like, how do we save some money? So always Medicare, you know, you look at what are the big tickets. So, you know, the risk, I think, in the future is Medicare funding, you know, like, is there going to be another piece of legislation that's going to look to reduce the amount of funding that the government pays to the health insurance companies for Medicare Advantage? Right now, I'd say, you know, we do enjoy bipartisan support within Congress and within the administration, you know, whether it's a Democrat or Republican. So I think that's very favorable. But I think just being realistic, you know, thinking about like $33 trillion of debt and, you know, where do you spend your money? And, you know, at some point, are we going to need to cut back? So, you know, I think that's like an inevitable challenge that we're going to have to do more with less. You know, it's just always an ongoing issue.
No, I like that. I like that philosophy. Yeah, I love that philosophy, Craig. And I think we all learned during COVID times how incredibly blessed we are to be in the right industry, to be in the right place at the right time. But also the companies, and we watched this a lot. This was almost sport for us, of watching, whether it's a restaurant or an insurance company, it didn't matter. Those that not just survived, but maybe thrived during COVID, like our organizations did. One, you didn't lose sight of what doesn't need to change, which is relationship and taking care of your people. But two, the ability to pivot. I think when you take a restaurant, for example, during COVID, if you had one way of delivering your product to the customer, and now that has been taken away, if you didn't have the ability to pivot and get that product in some other way to your customer in just the exact same level of excellence, then they struggled, right? And insurance agents, we finally had agents understanding e-enroll, right? And electronic submission and the things that maybe some were resisting, you know, was it change before you have to? We had a lot of agents that didn't change before they had to, but once they had to, they had the ability to go ahead and pivot, again, because of some of the systems that you created, you know, many, many years ago that we've all tried to copycat and be there for our agents so that they can be there for their customers wherever they need to be. But I just think that's such a cool way to look at the future, though, is not necessarily worrying about what's going to change, because it will change.
Yeah, but we know that.
be ready for it, be able to pivot. But in the meantime, you know, we take care of our people and we take care of the things that we know will never change, which is the relationships that we have with our agents, with each other, with an integrity, with our carriers, but definitely our people here. So in the few minutes we have left, let's switch a little bit to Craig the dad, Craig outside of Ritter Insurance. So what's your family's favorite getaway? What do you guys like to do when you're not talking shop?
Yeah, there's a lot we enjoy. I mean, we all like athletics, so I like watching sports and you know, doing sports as well, you know, being active. My youngest son is a basketball player, so he was a quarterback, but then he decided he liked football, but he loved basketball, so now he's focused on basketball. So I'll be he's been going all summer, going to camps and things like that.
Now, is he high school? Where's he at age-wise?
Yeah, he's a sophomore.
Sophomore.
In high school. So,
yeah. And he's the only one still at home, right?
Yep, that's right.
Yeah.
My daughter's at Villanova. She's in the band. And so we go out for Villanova football games, and we love going to Villanova basketball games.
Oh, how fun.
As well, when we have time, when we're not watching Cash is our youngest. when we're not watching Cash, we like try to get to a Villanova basketball game. And Callie is in the band there. So she plays.
Awesome.
And if we don't see her in person, we try to see her on TV.
Yeah.
Sometimes they show the band and we'll freeze the picture and try to find her in the band.
Like a where's Waldo, where's Callie?
Yeah. My oldest son is he's an outdoorsman, so he's working for the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers as a ranger for Raystown Lake, which is about an hour and a half from here.
Fantastic.
In addition to him being at Raystown Lake, Heidi and I have a lake house that we bought right before COVID, which was very fortunate to buy.
Good timing.
Right before COVID. So we spend a lot of weekends. It's about an hour from our house. So it's that's Lake Winona. So we like to go there and spend the weekends. Sometimes we'll have family reunions, you know, host some family reunions. And actually today tomorrow we're going to have some of our leaders go out there and, you know, to talk about the business side of things. So we've used it on a personal side and on a business side. We're also involved in a lot of missions in Africa. So like two major projects that we've done are in Eswatini, Swaziland which formerly called Swaziland with Adventures and Missions. So we support a number of what they call care points, which are just centers where children can come after school to get a meal. You know, there's you know, a religious side to it as well. We're also involved in a farm in Eswatini, where it's actually a working farm where they're bringing a lot of the young people to be able to train them on, you know, agriculture, you know, being able to fix equipment, being able to run a business, you know, really just training up that next generation so that they have a sustainable income, a sustainable way of life. So we were involved in that. And then finally, actually next week, I was supposed to be going with Heidi to Niger, where we are supporting a hospital there. We helped to build a surgical center in Niger for, you know, children who either have a deformity or an accident. A lot of cases, children in Africa they use fire to cook their food and for warmth and all that stuff. And maybe like a small child would trip and fall into a fire and get burned. And they just don't have the facilities to be able to correct those. And these become like long-term disabling conditions for them. So Cure International is the company is the not-for-profit that provides free medical services to children in Sub-Saharan Africa. We were supposed to be flying out to Niger next week to visit, but they had a coup months ago, so that's been canceled. So we're hopeful that we'll be able to do that in the future. So those are some of the things that we're really passionate about, you know, beyond just our local community, going kind of into the international community to be able to try to make a difference in people's lives and to try to give back you know, to those who kind of are less fortunate. We're so fortunate to be citizens of the United States and to be able to, you know, do all the wonderful things that we do in business, but then to be able to support others that maybe don't have our same advantages and circumstances is, you know, something that we're instructed to do, but it's really our pleasure to be able to do as well. So that's kind of some of the things that I do in my spare time when I'm not wearing this shirt.
Oh my gosh. Well, Craig Ritter, you are an amazing human. You're an amazing father, husband, businessman, partner. I have so enjoyed this journey. of not just today talking with you, but every time I've seen you over the years, just nothing but pure kindness and generosity in all walks of life, not just in financial generosity, but your time, your expertise. So on behalf of all of us listening, we all feel like we need to go out and do more now in this world. So thank you for motivating and inspiring us for that. But super, super proud to call you an official partner now, and enjoyed today, and look forward to seeing you again soon.
Yeah, it's great. And my pleasure to be your partner as well. And, you know, certainly learn a lot from you and Dan and in your organization. It's great to be, you know, hearing stories that were so well aligned. You know, it's kind of a similar philosophy. So I do appreciate you guys so much.
Awesome. Yep. Awesome. Well, we appreciate you all listening. And thanks again so much, Craig.